The year is 1970, and the unthinkable has happened. Jack the King Kirby, the man most responsible for building the Marvel Universe next to Stan Lee, has suddenly and without warning defected to DC. This is a bombshell. This is the equivalent of the Celtics' Larry Bird leaving for the Lakers. DC wastes no time boasting about its big acquisition. The company runs ads in its comics touting Kirby's arrival. Kirby is such a towering figure that the teasers don't even mention him by name. They simply read, "The Great One is coming," and promise people, places, and things so powerful in concept, it's almost terrifying. What's really terrifying, however, to both Kirby and DC is what might happen if the artist's new series were leaked to Marvel. DC is determined to keep this under wraps. Security is tight. Even other DC employees aren't told what Kirby's working on. Kirby's assistant recalls visiting DC's offices and top editors, swarming him, begging for a hint about the King's new projects. Kirby is paranoid, and rightfully so. He believes that Marvel and his old boss Stan Lee aren't above stealing ideas from him. In one case, Kirby concocted a proposal for a DC comic about a race of warrior women in outer space he called Galaxy Green. The series never saw print, but a few months later, Marvel publishes a story in one of its black and white magazines featuring a similar premise. It's written by Stan Lee. So Kirby's new DC work must remain locked up, safe, in the DC offices. But then one day, a few months before the new title is set to hit stands, Kirby's assistant makes a friendly visit to Marvel's offices, and you'll never guess what he finds there.
We get support from Airbnb. Staying in an Airbnb is often one of my favorite parts of a trip, especially on business travel. Instead of slogging to another hotel and waiting in line after you've been driving or flying all day, there is nothing better than landing in a place that, well, really feels like a home away from home. Maybe you've stayed in an Airbnb before and thought to yourself, you know, this actually seems pretty doable. Maybe my place could be an Airbnb. Well, I'm here to tell you it could be. You could be sitting on an Airbnb and not even know it. It might be as simple as starting with your spare room, or maybe even your whole place when you're away. Say you and your family are headed away for a much-deserved spring break. Well, why not Airbnb your place and make some extra money towards the trip? Win-win. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
From Wondery, this is Business Wars. I'm David Brown. Last episode, we charted the rise of Marvel in the 1960s. The Fantastic Four, Black Panther, Spider-Man, all were characters unleashed by the fertile collaboration between Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. These two men redefined superhero storytelling and made Marvel a pop culture force. And they did it in just a handful of years. You're listening to Episode 4 in our 6-part series, Schemes, Scams, and Double Crosses. Now, Jack Kirby is gone, fled to D.C. His relationship with Stan Lee had been strained for years. The final straw, a new contract Kirby thinks unfair. A Marvel lawyer calls him at home.
Mr. Kirby, when are we going to get your signed contract?
This contract is completely unfair. Some changes have to be made.
There will be no changes, Mr. Kirby. You can take it or leave it, sign the thing. or get out.
Don't speak to me that way. I'm far too important to Marvel to be treated like this.
Important? Everyone knows Stan Lee created everything at Marvel. Any idiot can draw up his ideas. Goodbye, Mr. Kirby.
There comes a time when you've had a gut full of everything, Kirby would later say. I had a gut full of Marvel.
Now it's 1970. Kirby's arrived at DC and the world of comics has been turned upside down. The industry and Kirby's legions of fans are holding their breath, waiting to see what Kirby will do. DC offers him its biggest title, the one responsible for putting DC on the map. We're talking Superman here. Kirby, however, is hesitant to kick the current writer and artist off the book, so he settles for another title without a permanent creative team. It's called Superman's Pal, Jimmy Olsen. It's an odd choice, to say the least. He's now working on an often goofy Superman spinoff starring the freckle-faced Daily Planet photographer. But Kirby immediately sets out to completely revamp the title in a single issue, bringing more of a Marvel feel to the previously kiddie comic. It's a move that makes his conservative DC superiors uneasy. But this is not Kirby's dream project. Remember that California meeting the artist had with Carmine Infantino, in which Kirby showed the DC head some mock covers of a project he'd been working on? The ones Infantino was so enthusiastic about, he offered Kirby a contract on the spot? Well, Kirby calls this series The Fourth World. It's a family of three interconnected fantasy titles chronicling a conflict between powerful beings on distant twin planets. In hindsight, a pretty good metaphor for the Marvel-DC battle. The idea for The Fourth World germinated when Kirby was working on Marvel's Thor, just another example of the creative bleed between the two publishers. Kirby conceived of a race of new gods that will replace the old ones of myth. The Fourth World features loads of far-out ideas and characters, perhaps most memorably, the introduction of cosmic villain Darkseid, who can blast a powerful energy beam from his eyes and who has a burning desire to conquer the universe. Darkseid's underling Steppenwolf, another Kirby creation, served as the antagonist in the 2017 film Justice League.
Long before I was born, he came as the spearhead of an alien invasion.
This world will fall, like all the others.
Kirby's Fourth World promises to not only generate a tsunami of publicity, but to potentially turn around fading DC. DC still leads Marvel in overall sales, but the challenger is closing fast. So DC is taking no chances that Kirby's new line could get out. And that's when it does. One of Kirby's assistants stops by the Marvel offices, and he is floored by what he finds tacked to the wall. He finds photocopied pages from Kirby's still unreleased Fourth World comics. When Kirby hears about it, he flies into a rage. His work is now vulnerable to copying. How could this possibly happen? Who could have possibly done this? The list of suspects is short because so few people had access to this work. Kirby has one name in mind, Vinnie Coletta, the series inker. Vinnie's in charge of taking Kirby's penciled artwork and finishing it with permanent ink. Like Kirby, Vinnie Coletta is a longtime fixture in comics. He's also one of the more colorful characters to ever come through the industry. Coletta was born in Sicily and grew up on the Brooklyn streets. He comes across in person as a character straight out of central casting from The Godfather. He has a head of thick white hair that he combs back. He's a flashy dresser. He once showed up at a comic convention wearing a white suit and a black silk shirt unbuttoned nearly to his navel. His bookie would often show up at DC's offices, so would a parade of attractive young women who would disappear into his personal office behind a closed door. Employees would comment with a smirk that Coletta must be sketching the ladies. He is also rumored to be dating the latest Bond girl. Whether he has actual underworld connections, he certainly likes to make others believe he does. It's all part of his habit of making himself seem important. He once came to DC's Infantino curiously offering to carry messages back and forth between Infantino and Stan Lee. So, when pages from Kirby's unreleased Fourth World book are found hanging in the Marvel offices, well, the evidence soon points to Coletta. It's unclear if his leaking of the work is malicious, or just another ham-fisted attempt to build up his own importance. Either way, DC is livid by the betrayal, and Coletta is fired as Kirby's inker. Betrayal must have been in the air, because another curious case happens around the same time. DC suspects it has another spy in its midst. The company brass has a hunch that late at night, after most have gone home, some employee in the production department is rifling through desks looking for intel to link to the fanzines, or worse, Marvel itself. DC is determined to catch the spy, and to do so, the company launches a World War II-style counter-espionage operation worthy of a novel. The mission, like all proper top-secret operations, even has a code name. It's called Blockbuster. DC's publisher, Carmine Infantino, draws up a phony memo on DC letterhead, claiming that the company is soon going to be putting out a new line of massive 500-page comic books. The publisher leaves the decoy memo in the out tray on an employee's desk one night, and then he waits. The trap works. Word of the new Blockbuster books mysteriously finds its way to various fanzines, and, of course, over to Marvel's Manhattan offices, located just a few blocks north from DC in Midtown Manhattan. The next thing anyone knows, Marvel's Stan Lee is talking about doing his own 500-page book for a dollar. The spy is busted, though he is ultimately dealt with mercifully. Instead of being fired, he is instead no longer allowed to work nights, where he might have the opportunity to rifle desks. All this activity makes for a paranoid atmosphere at DC. Around the same time, a longtime Marvel writer named Larry Lieber applies for work at DC. He sends his resume over to the company and waits to hear back. DC never contacts him, which is a bit strange, because Lieber is an accomplished veteran writer who penned the first appearance of Iron Man, among many other high-profile comics. You'd think any comic book publisher would be lucky to have him. There's just one problem. Larry Lieber also happens to be the brother of Stan Lee. A few months later, Lieber is in a Manhattan watering hole when he runs into Carmine Infantino. There, he confronts the DC boss about the snub.
Carmine! So what gives? How come I never heard back from you? I sent my resume.
What?
You mean that was on the level? We thought Stan Lee was sending you over to spy on us.
It's a funny story, in part because all this cloak and dagger in the context of superhero comics sounds absolutely ludicrous. But over the years, there have been several incidents involving information mysteriously making its way from DC to Marvel, or vice versa. And several other incidents where the coincidences were so eerie, you can't help but wonder.
Including one of the most successful comic book franchises of all time, the X-Men.
Let's face it, after a night with drinks, it can be hard to bounce back the next morning. But let me tell you, if there's a surefire way to wake up feeling fresh after a night of drinking, it's with ZBiotics. ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for that rough next day. ZBiotics produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. Just remember to make ZBiotics your first drink of the night. Drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. I have a friend who had to go to a major conference the night before. Well, you know how these pre-conference cocktail sessions can go. But he cracked open a bottle of ZBiotics before that first drink. The next day, he got up feeling ready to give that presentation his 100%. Head on over to ZBiotics.com/BW to get 15% off your first order when you use BW at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/BW and make sure to use the code BW at checkout for 15% off. You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days.
Maybe the most jaw-dropping of all the dubious similarities between Marvel and DC comic book characters involves Marvel's The X-Men. You know them, of course.
Professor?
You're gonna find this hard to believe.
In the beginning, the Sentinels were just targeting mutants. Then they began targeting everyone.
They got their own movie franchise in 2000, starring Hugh Jackman as Wolverine and Patrick Stewart as Professor X. The Mutant Super Team was introduced in 1963, and the first issue, like so many of those early Marvel titles, was written by Stan Lee and drawn by Jack Kirby. In a novel twist, the group's members are outcasts, shunned and feared by society at large for their abilities. They're led by a wheelchair-bound genius. That's Professor X. It's a neat idea, and one that DC had just happened to do a few months earlier. Their comic, My Greatest Adventure number 80, introduced the Doom Patrol, a team of superpowered outcasts led by a wheelchair-bound genius. While the cover of X-Men number 1 promised the strangest superheroes of all, the Doom Patrol were billed on their cover as the world's strangest heroes. In another incredible coincidence, the Doom Patrol squared off against a group of villains called the Brotherhood of Evil in March 1964. And what do you know? The very same month the X-Men fought the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. The creator of DC's Doom Patrol was Arnold Drake, with help from Bob Haney. Yes, those are the very same writers who stumbled upon those first Marvel comics in 1962 and tried to warn the DC brass about the coming revolution. Probably no surprise that they were responsible for one of the few comics at DC that really felt like a Marvel comic. In fact, it felt so much like a Marvel comic that Marvel seemed to copy it, releasing the X-Men just 3 months after the Doom Patrol hit newsstands. After he saw the X-Men, Drake smelled a rat. He stormed into his editor's office.
Look at this. Have you seen this? It's exactly like Doom Patrol. The team leader's in a wheelchair and everything.
Yeah, Drake. Don't get your bowels in an uproar. You think the wheelchair thing is a new idea, right? It's not. It's not. Detectives like Nero Wolfe have been solving crimes from armchairs for years.
Drake initially agreed and didn't suspect foul play. At least he didn't push it. He reasoned that the 3 months between Doom Patrol's release and X-Men 1 hitting stands was not enough time for Marvel to rip him off. Later in life, however, he would change his opinion. He suspected that someone could have leaked the script to Stan Lee, giving the Marvel editor enough time to copy his idea. Lee claims he was unfamiliar with the Doom Patrol, and had he known of their existence, he would not have done the X-Men. And so, the mystery remains. Coincidence? Or theft? Another equally suspicious case involves Swamp Thing, DC's popular muck monster introduced in 1971. Swamp Thing bore a strong resemblance to a Marvel muck monster that debuted a few months earlier called Man-Thing. To further confuse matters, the co-creators of Swamp Thing and Man-Thing happen to be roommates. I don't think we have to call in Scotland Yard to figure this one out. So you can see why Jack Kirby might have been a bit paranoid at DC. His suspicions about Stan Lee actually go back decades. Way back in 1941, Kirby and his then-partner Joe Simon became convinced that Marvel was not paying them their fair share of royalties for their creation of Captain America. And so, they negotiated a deal to jump to DC. The pair don't quit Marvel right away and decided to keep their DC deal a secret.
But word somehow got back to Marvel's owner, Martin Goodman, and he did not take the news well. He wasn't about to give them a counteroffer they couldn't refuse, but he wasn't above working a little fear into their lives either. One day, Simon and Kirby were working at their Manhattan studio when three of Goodman's relatives burst in. There was Goodman's brother, Dave, a would-be photographer who used his camera and the promise of a modeling contract to pick up girls. There was also Goodman's other brother, Abe, a usually quiet bookkeeper type. Rounding out the trio is the man known as Uncle Robbie, Goodman's loudmouthed brother-in-law who worked for the publisher, but no one was quite sure what he did exactly. They want to talk to Simon and Kirby, only they're acting like extras from a mob movie.
Hey, what's this about? You guys are working for DC. You haven't been true to us. You haven't been loyal to us. You should be ashamed of yourselves. Okay. Take it easy. You better finish this latest issue of Captain America. Or else. After that, you can consider yourselves fired. Fired. Fine. Get out of here.
It's unclear how Marvel found out that Kirby and Simon were planning to jump ship. Kirby has a theory. Stan Lee. The next time I see that little son of a bitch, I'm gonna kill him, Kirby promised of Lee. According to Simon, Kirby, for the rest of his life, until the day he died, hated Stan Lee. And in 1971, he is about to exact some revenge. Kirby is busy working on his new DC titles. Then, in the sixth issue of one, he introduces a con man called Funky Flashman. The character is a dead ringer for Lee, right down to the toupee, beard, and snappy banter. In the comic, Flashman literally runs a slave plantation and gets paid for doing nothing. In the shadow world between success and failure, there lives the driven little man who dreams of having it all, a caption reads. The opportunistic spoiler without character or values, who preys on all things like a cannibal, including you. The caricature, in real life, wounds Stan Lee and further sours Kirby's relationship with Marvel. Kirby wouldn't be laughing for long, though. His dream project, The Fourth World, is perhaps too ambitious, and the titles struggle. They're quickly canceled. DC's hope that Kirby's new line would be a Marvel killer goes up in smoke. DC is out of options. It's lost. No direction forward. It tried copying Marvel, which led only to embarrassment, and now the gambit to steal its rival's top talent has fizzled. Its sales erode through the 1960s while Marvel surge, and in 1972, the inevitable finally happens. Up becomes down, black becomes white, and the little underdog company that a little more than a decade ago had just one full-time employee passes the industry's giant. David kills Goliath. This being a rivalry story, the way Marvel takes the lead naturally involves a Shakespearean-style double-cross. It starts in 1971. DC decides to raise its cover price from 15 cents to 25. Rumor has it the move is discussed with Marvel, and Marvel also agrees to raise its price nearly simultaneously. Price fixing like this is potentially illegal, mind you, but it's a mom-and-pop industry. No one's gonna raise a stink. DC raises its prices first, then Marvel. But Marvel's Martin Goodman has something else in mind. I'm gonna renege on this deal with DC. After just 1 month at the higher price, we're suddenly going down 20 cents. DC's gonna be stuck at the higher price point. They're really gonna take a bath. And take a bath DC does. At 5 cents cheaper, Marvel Comics are even more attractive to young readers. But Goodman isn't done toying with DC. To celebrate finally besting his longtime rival, he treats his staff to dinner and drinks at a local Manhattan restaurant. He chooses a bar called the Friar Tuck Inn, right across from DC's offices on 3rd Avenue at 55th Street, where its staff likes hanging out. The Marvel crew enjoys a wild night, chowing down on steaks and tossing back drinks. This victory caps an unbelievable run that started just 11 years earlier, when Stan Lee was ordered to come up with a clone of DC's Justice League. Instead, a new American mythology was born, and Marvel will remain on top for good, outside of a few months here and there. DC will never again lead in monthly comic book sales. But in the end, periodical sales will turn out to be small potatoes, because in a few years, both companies will discover where the real money lives, in Hollywood. The revelation will set off a frantic exploitation of these superhero characters and touch off a bitter new war between these old foes, one that will now be worth billions of dollars.
Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
On the next episode, Superman gets his movie close-up, leaping to the silver screen and opening up what will become a whole new era of superheroes, headlining blockbuster movies that rake in billions of dollars in ticket sales and merchandising. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Business Wars. I'm your host, David Brown. Reed Tucker, author of Slugfest, Inside the Epic 50-Year Battle Between Marvel and DC, wrote this story. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Sound designed by Bay Area Sound. Our show's executive producer is Marshall Louie, and it was created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.